And so today we continue on our study of the first chapter of Genesis, the story of the creation, or at least I should say the first story of the creation. We'll get to the second one later. And we are learning that this gives us a process. It's called the creative process, a process whereby we can manifest our deepest desires and dreams and solve problems in our lives using a blueprint. It's a seven-step, seven-day blueprint. Realizing that not everyone has been here for all the lessons, I'll do a quick review. Those of you who have been here every day, I expect you to be memorizing this, okay? Are you ready? There'll be a test at the end. Actually, there will be a test at the end, but it won't be a pencil and paper test. It'll be how well we can all, myself included, incorporate the steps in our lives. So, a quick review. On day one, in the midst of darkness and chaos, God said, "Let there be light," showing us that we can see a spiritual illumination and awareness of God's light even in the midst of our struggles and our darkest days. And day two, God said, "Let there be a firmament to divide the waters." And we've talked about what that firmament meant to the early Hebrew people. Metaphysically, firmament stands for faith. The faith to bring infinite possibilities from the invisible realm to the visible realm and to our lives. Thirdly, let the waters be gathered and let the dry land appear. And the dry land represents what? Anybody remember? The power of imagination. Okay, when we're finished with this whole process, I'm going to give you a little sheet giving them all, and I'm coming up with an acronym to help us all help to remember one, to remember it. So I'll provide that for you later. But that power of imagination allows us to visualize our good and therefore draw ourselves to that good. And last week we talked about step number four. Let there be a greater light to rule the day and a lesser light to rule the night, and also stars. And we said that the greater light represents our power of understanding and the lesser light represents our power of will. And when we align our will with spiritual understanding, we allow the divine to flow through every single area of our lives. And now we are ready for day five. And God said, "Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky." So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves of every kind, with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. So on day five, the pattern continues. God creates through the power of the word, affirming, "Let there be," and God calls everything that he has created good. However, on day five, a new element is added. Does anybody catch what it is? Something God says on day five that he has not mentioned before. Anybody? I'll give you a hint. It starts with a B. God says, right, blessing. God gives a blessing. On this day, for the first time, God speaks a creative word and then delivers a blessing. And he says with his blessing, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas and the skies of the earth." It's interesting that 4 days have already gone by in the creation story, and this is the day, according to the way the early Hebrews told the story, that God comes forth with a blessing. And God's blessing on this day seems to be for fertility and increase, to fill the earth with magnificent abundance. Now, Charles Fillmore tells us that the word bless means to invoke good upon, to call forth the very action of God, to confer God's good on something or someone. He says the power of blessing is that it imparts the quickening, one of Charles Fillmore's favorite words that you never hear anymore, meaning the hastening, to impart the hastening of spiritual power that produces growth and increase. Now, Bible scholars have long debated about why creatures of fin and feather are chosen to be the first animals created. I mean, out of all the animal kingdom, why are they first? And some have noted that fish and fowl are remarkable for their rapid and prodigious increase. And the Hebrew word for fowl means not just birds, but every flying thing, including birds and insects and even bats. I don't see any bats in our picture, but it could include any of those, okay? And so, also, what about the giant sea monsters? Isn't that an interesting thing to be talking about? Some translations actually say huge dragons. Perhaps they were referring to whales or crocodiles or even hippopotami, anything that would be large in the seas. The important thing is that those creatures, with their astonishing size and strength, were amazing proof to the early Hebrews of the power and glory of the one true creator. Now, Mesopotamian legends abound with stories of monsters as deities. The Canaanite and Egyptian people viewed these huge monsters as gods to be feared. And I'm sure they were pretty fearsome to look at. The fifth day, therefore, exemplifies the Hebrew belief that the earth and everything in it was created by the one true God, who ends the day by blessing all that he has created. And as always, when we read any Bible story, we ask ourselves the question, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for using the creative process in our lives? Because here's the thing, whether we realize it or not, we are always, every moment, using that process. And did you notice that the text says swarms of living creatures? According to Charles Fillmore, the creatures themselves represent ideas swarming in our minds. Fish symbolize multiplication. I have a fish pond. I can see why. You know, fish are very fast multipliers. And flocks mean thoughts. Birds in flight represent higher thoughts. You know, all through the Bible, anytime anything is up, it refers to being in higher consciousness. Like, do you remember when we studied the Lazarus blueprint? Jesus looked up before he raised Lazarus, and that just, it didn't mean he looked up to heaven, because Jesus said all the time, heaven is within. It means he rose to higher consciousness, to higher spiritual thoughts. So, with all that said, the creatures on the first day represent the concepts of multiplication and higher spiritual thinking. And we know that those thoughts we hold in mind produce their own kind in our consciousness. So I'm going to show you now what step five means in the creative process. And when I put this word on the screen, I want you to get the immediate thought, what immediately pops into your head. Okay, are you ready? Day five is... Ta-da, the power of judgment. Yeah, there you go. Oh, no. It was so funny during the, I think it was the power of prayer class last Saturday, we were listing all the divine attributes, and I was charting as fast as I could, and people were throwing out ideas like love and grace and goodness and trust and order, and someone said judgment, and it was immediately suggested that we change that word to discernment or wisdom. And I think maybe the first thing that popped in all of our minds was that bit of Jesus' advice about judge not, lest you be judged. But Jesus was talking about what kind of judgment we employ. In our human skins, aren't we all judgment machines? And didn't Jesus sometimes call the Pharisees and Sadducees hypocrites and vipers? That sounds a little judgmental to me. What about you? Okay, our power of judgment is our ability to evaluate, discern, be wise, there comes forth the wisdom, appraise, and apply what we know. Some of the current writers do actually call this power wisdom or discernment. But here's the thing, like all of our spiritual powers, every single one, judgment can be used from the human consciousness or from our true spiritual identity. And even human judgment is not all negative. Paul Hesselbeck and Cher Helton write in their book Power Up, judgment has gotten a bad rap, and it does not have to be that way. Yes, we are judging machines, but it is not the ability of judgment that is the problem. It is how we use it. Just think about all the ways you've used judgment already today. You made the judgment to come to church this morning. Hallelujah. Good. I'm glad you're here. You also, that might have led to a judgment about what time you had to get up. Already this morning, you've made the judgment about whether to pray or meditate, whether to take a walk, whether to watch the news, whether to eat breakfast, what to eat, what clothes to wear, and my personal favorite, do I have enough gas to get to church? That's when I'm driving. When Bob's driving, we always have enough gas. I admit that. But it's really important, and David Williamson says this in the book, 12 Powers in You. It's really important for us to use our power of judgment to judge what is good and wise. And here's the thing. Every single day is judgment day. We sit on the bench in the courtroom of our minds. We make rulings. We make judgments and decisions. We hand down decrees. We decree a thing and it becomes so for us. It is our reality. We may say when we get up in the morning, oh no, not today. It's going to be a horrible day. I've got so much to do. It's going to be a miserable day. And guess what? It will be. It will be. Or we can wake up and we can say to ourselves, it's a beautiful, no matter what is happening around us, we can say it's a beautiful day in my consciousness. And likewise, it will be. The difference is not in the day. The difference is in our judgment and our choice. So, you be the judge. Is the glass half empty or is the glass half full? Do rose bushes have thorns or do thorn bushes have roses? Do we focus on the thorns or on the roses? I know I've told this story before, but our granddaughter Ellie, when she was about 4 or 5, was out in the yard with me, and she was just exploring around as kids will do, and she stooped down and picked up a bright yellow dandelion. I'll never forget this moment. She held it up to the sun, and she looked at me, and she said, Grandma, isn't this a beautiful flower? And you know what? I never quite looked at dandelions the same way since. And trust me, we have a lot of them to look at, so it's okay. There's a story about, and a lot of you probably heard this, there's a story about a reporter who was at a baseball game interviewing umpires about how they made split-second decisions in calling balls and strikes. When you think about it, that baseball travels now at close to 100 miles an hour or maybe over, and it only has to just cut across the corner of the plate, doesn't it, to be called a strike. And he interviewed the first famous umpire who said, well, son, there's balls and there's strikes, and I call them the way I see them. Then he interviewed the second umpire who said, well, there's balls and there's strikes, and I call them the way they are. Then he interviewed the third umpire who said, there's balls and there's strikes, and they ain't nothing until I call them. And how true is that? How true is that? Our choices determine our reality. William Wark, in his book, How to Use Your 12 Gifts of God, tells us that if we are not exercising perfect judgment, and let's be honest here, the doors are closed, it's just us, sometimes we don't exercise perfect judgment, do we? Any of us. If we are not exercising perfect judgment, we are at least in the process of learning how. And it is part of that process to make some mistakes along the way. But he warns that the mistake-making is an area where we must be really careful with our judgments. Because sometimes there, we mix spiritual and personal judgment. It is dangerous to beat ourselves up about our less than perfect choices. He says, regret is a crippler that stops our creative flow. And his advice is, regret nothing. I regret nothing, nothing. Okay, I promise I'm going to start using more dog pictures. Somehow cat pictures just find me. I don't know what to say, but anyway. So ask yourself these questions. When I miss the mark, when I make a mistake or take a wrong turn, what calls do I make about myself? Do I call myself stupid, a failure? Some of you are shaking your heads. That's the wrong answer. Incompetent or weak? I mean, sometimes we all do things like that, and we must watch our self-talk. Do I fill my thoughts with coulda, woulda, shoulda? To exercise our power of judgment, we must stop shooting on ourselves. Spiritual judgment is seeing all things through the divine perspective of the Christ within. Instead of shooting on ourselves, we could call ourselves growing, learning, overcoming, and forgiving. This is the spiritual truth of who we are. Every experience is our teacher. Every day is a new start. Every hour is a new beginning. Every second is your second chance. Martha Smock wrote, "Every one of us has had experiences that at first seem difficult, but prove to be times of growth and gain. Through these experiences, we discovered new strengths in ourselves. We unfolded new powers and capabilities. We experienced a closer unity with God, and we relied on Spirit with a faith greater than we knew we even had." So in other words, spiritual evolution is a process of realizing who we already are. We already are this divine being. We just have to realize it. And in doing so, we come to know that we are so much more than we ever thought ourselves to be. We are more than our mistakes. We are more than others' opinions of us. We are more than our emotions, and we are even more than our bodies. As individualized expressions of the Christ, we are ever-evolving beings, finding new expression every single day. And we can hold, and question, can we hold that goodness for ourselves without sending it out to others? Can we? I don't think so. When we really behold the Christ in ourselves, we're going to see the Christ in others. In our human skins, we are judgment machines sometimes, prone to judge others by their appearances, their words, their deeds. And the thing is, we not only should avoid shooting on ourselves, we have to avoid shooting on others, as in this typical example. "Everything covered but her eyes. What a cruel, male-dominated culture," the woman in the bikini says. And then the woman in full dress says, "Nothing covered but her eyes. What a cruel, male-dominated culture." It's all in our point of view. It's all in the way that we are seeing things. Someone wisely said, "If there is one person with whom you are not at peace, then you have work to do." And that work begins in our own thoughts and feelings. Our human judgments are always based on fear, criticism, I shouldn't say always, often, based on fear, criticism, competition, and condemnation. And they are always incomplete. That's the thing. We can never really know what another person's journey is. In her book, Divine Audacity, Linda Martella Whitsett relates the story, maybe some of you have heard this one, by Dr. T. Barry Brazelton. He's a pediatrician and author of more than 30 books on parenting. And Dr. Brazelton recalled being in a grocery store, observing a mother and child in line. And the child was having an absolute tantrum, crying and screaming, and the mother was actually swatting at the child, kind of kicking even at the child, which, can you imagine, did not quiet the child down. Are we surprised? And Dr. Brazelton said his first human reaction, he wanted to take that mother and pin her arms to her sides to keep her from hurting the child. However, instead, he took a deep breath and asked himself a question that's really important for us all to ask: what do I really know about this woman and this child? So softly, gently, with that question in his mind, he approached the mother and simply said to her, "It sure is hard to take a little one shopping." Well, at that moment, the frazzled mom sank to the floor right there in the store and started sobbing herself, so relieved that someone finally seemed to understand her plight. And by now, the child stopped crying, and the doctor watched as the little girl approached her mother, crawled up into her lap, wrapped her little arms around her mom, and held her own mom. And in a flash of intuition and insight, Dr. Brazelton innately knew, how to calm the mom and allow her to do what was hers to do, which was really to love the child. Jesus told us, "Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment." when we realize the truth that the Christ Spirit dwells in us and all others, and yes, all others. When I was teaching children, I had a little card. Every single year, I moved it from plan book to plan book to plan book, and it said, "Those who seem the least lovable need your love the most." And that is certainly true in adulthood also. And when we open our eyes to spiritual understanding, we see as Jesus saw, and we can judge as Jesus judged. Our power of judgment is a discerning power of mind. It's spiritual discernment. It's that inner voice that helps us determine the truth in every aspect of our lives and come to a greater reality of ourselves and others. Recently, I passed a sign on a church. It was on Highway 21. I bet some of you have seen it. It's probably still up there. It said, "The head may seek God, but it is the heart that finds God." And Jesus told us time and time again that the kingdom of heaven is within. And Charles Fillmore added, "We're wasting our time if we look for it anyplace else." So through prayer and meditation, as you work through the creative process to manifest something you desire in your life, we all learn to listen, to turn within to that divine guidance. And we work to exercise right judgment in all things, all situations, and all people. We learn to listen to that spiritual guidance because it is always there, and we discern it more clearly. We relax, we stop struggling, and we give our concerns, our dreams, our desires to God, knowing that we are always being guided. Our God-given intuition is our personal, internal GPS. God is our built-in navigator. Not very long, I was going on a pond tour one day. I was by myself, and I had my navigator, and I'm driving through a really remote area. I had no idea where I was. I came down to the bottom of a hill, and all of a sudden it said, "Satellite signal lost." And I'm like, oh, great, now what do I do? Because I paid no attention to what I was doing. I was depending on the navigator. And here's the thing. God never loses a signal. He never loses our signal. And so in the courtroom of our minds, we can feel united with Spirit and in perfect harmony with the universe. Elizabeth Sand Turner writes, "There is always something that can be done, another way of solving a difficulty, another way to realize a dream or a desire. It just takes spiritual judgment to perceive it." And so as we continue now to work through the steps of this creative process to enrich our lives, to solve our earthly problems and manifest our dreams and desires, let us continue to know and see that in the midst of darkness and chaos, there's always light. We can always stand firm in our faith. We can use our power of imagination to visualize our good. And we can align our powers of will and understanding with what is spiritually true. And I'm actually going next week, Reverend Lee Remington is going to speak. I'm going to on a trip this week to a Unity conference. I'm going to actually hear Linda Martello-Witsit speak, so I'm very excited about that. Hopefully I'll come back with lots of good things. But I'm going to give us all, myself included, a two-week homework assignment, okay? And that is, for the next 2 weeks, let's really try to set the intention to use our magnificent power of spiritual judgment to allow that divine light to illumine our way and manifest our desires. And remember, you be the judge, always. So let's take a moment now just to take that into our consciousness in order to prepare for prayer and meditation. Let us affirm the great truth about the divine. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one power and one presence in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.